Chapter 25 Sunday, 10:23 a.m. Megan's laughter carried from her room two doors down as Lucy emerged from the restroom, still shaky. It was the sweetest sound Lucy had ever heard. She closed her eyes, listening hard, imprinting the sound on her memory. A gift to be unwrapped later. A sudden image of Melissa Yeager, so beautiful and helpless to do anything for her daughter, flit through Lucy's mind. She choked on a sob before swallowing it down. Megan wouldn't have to worry about going through this alone. Nick and Lucy would never abandon her. Not like Ashley's parents had. Ashley. She couldn't forget Ashley. Not while Lucy was her only chance. The desk clerk waved at her. "Mrs. Callahan, I have Dr. Scott on the line for you." Finally, a chance to get some answers. "Hello?" "Mrs. Callahan, I'm so sorry that I haven't had a chance to get up there and meet you in person, but I wanted to call and fill you in on Megan's condition."
"You found out what's going on? Why, is she sick?"
"No, I'm afraid it's one of those good news, bad news situations. Her CT confirmed an enlarged spleen and liver, but it didn't reveal any other abnormalities other than several axillary lymph nodes."
Axillary. That meant armpit. Wasn't that where Hodgkin's disease started?
Lucy hugged her free arm around her chest.
"Are you telling me she has cancer?"
"No, no. I'm telling you that there are some worrisome symptoms, but that so far we do not have any confirmation of the cause. It could be as simple as a virus or infection."
"Or it could be cancer."
He hesitated, obviously not appreciating her blunt style.
"Well, yes."
"So what's the plan?"
"I'm going to repeat some of the blood work in the morning, and by then we should have some of our other tests for infectious diseases back. If nothing shows up, or if anything looks worrisome, then we'll need to discuss the possibilities of a lymph node biopsy."
Lucy's breath escaped her in a whoosh that made her head rush. She sagged against the counter.
"More tests, but no answers."
"I'm sorry, but that's the best I can do for now."
"If it is..." She swallowed hard.
"Cancer. Can you treat it? Have we caught it soon enough?"
"Depending on the pathology, I'd have to say Megan's prognosis would definitely be favorable. But nothing is for certain until we know exactly what we're dealing with."
Lucy was silent, trying to process the information.
"I'll come up as soon as I'm done here in the ICU and go over everything with your husband and Megan. But in the meantime, I didn't want you to be unnecessarily worried. All in all, the fact that we haven't found anything seriously wrong is an excellent sign."
An excellent sign, but no guarantee.
"Thank you, Dr. Scott."
She was surprised to find Nick and Megan engrossed in a video game when she returned. Their household was not big on TV, instead focused most of their free time together on physical activities, reading, cooking, gardening, talking. Hopelessly old-fashioned and out of touch with reality, as Megan constantly reminded them. As if spending actual face time with her loving parents was a punishment, unimaginable, extreme cruelty. Yet, here she was, gleefully teaching her father how to zap aliens and strategize as they plotted their way through a labyrinth. Nick was stretched out on the bed beside her, his teeth worrying his lower lip as he concentrated. Lucy stood beside the bed, watching, wrapping one arm behind Megan. She asked Megan to pause the game while she filled them in on what Dr. Scott had told her. Megan quirked her mouth, considering the new information.
"No needles until tomorrow?
Unless something changes.
Can you be with me when they do the test?"
"We'll ask Dr. Scott to be sure, but I'll do my best."
"Can I have a kitty when we get home? I read that pets boost the immune system so people don't get sick so often."
Nick looked away, one hand covering his grin.
It was so typical of Megan to consider all sides of the problem and quickly turn it to her advantage. Lucy rumpled her hair, drawing a look of disapproval. No pets. She gave Megan the same answer she had for months. Not until we get settled and you show that you're responsible enough to take care of it yourself.
But, Mom...
Lucy's heart squeezed in agony. God, it was so hard to say no when Megan turned those big, dark eyes on her, especially when she'd been so brave and when she was so sick. Megan had never had more than the stomach flu before now.
We'll see.
All right.
Megan bounced with triumph and grabbed her remote.
Come on, Dad. I'm going to kick your butt.
Not if I blow away all your goblin hordes.
The screen filled with an explosion of light and zapping sound effects as lightning bolts crisscrossed. A few minutes later, a tinny version of Tap sounded.
Dead again, Dad,
Megan crowed, bouncing in a makeshift victory dance.
Want to come back as a mutant zombie or start the game again and be human?
I was trying to get killed. Zombies have way more fun, Nick said.
He reached his left hand up, stroking Lucy's arm.
You okay?
They bought a lunch tray if you want anything to eat. She glanced over at the two trays sitting on the windowsill. Megan's was empty, except for what looked to be the remnants of a chicken finger smothered in ketchup and mustard. The adult tray, with its roast beef slathered in congealed gravy, was barely touched.
Thanks, I'm fine.
She squeezed his hand, silently asking him the same question. Are you okay? He considered the answer for a moment, their eyes locking behind Megan's back, and slowly nodded, but his smile had vanished. Megan reset controls on the game. There was some complicated scrolling and clicking until she was satisfied.
Did you teach yourself how to play this?
Lucy asked.
Sure, it's easy.
For a 12-year-old. Lucy thought of Shadow World, the game Ashley had buried herself in.
So the computer generates all the scenarios, makes all the decisions?
With just the two of us, yeah,
she said, leaning to one side as she piloted some kind of sled pulled by werewolves through an ice field. Rumbles and crashes of falling icicles reverberated from the speakers as she dodged deadly shards and avoided falling into chasms.
But you can also play with a group. Have one person set up the universe, control everything.
An evil cackle sounded as an army of vampires attacked. Megan deftly outran them, leaving in her wake a frozen track of holy water that vaporized any who followed. Nick was hunched forward, waiting for the right moment to unleash his mutant zombie.
How does that work? Does the person in control just set things in motion and everything is decided with a roll of the dice? Or could he set things up differently for different players? Customize it.
A glimmer of an idea was forming as she watched Megan and Nick fall under the spell of the game.
Could they maybe even communicate with individual players?
A conversation with God, Nick mumbled as his zombie tackled one of the werewolves and began to eviscerate and eat it, complete with slobbering sound effects. Sounds like fun.
Both he and Megan were silent for a moment, fighting their way into a dark cavern, scattering hordes of goblins.
Look out above!
Nick shouted, almost bouncing off the bed. A swooping form of a vampire bat filled the screen, quickly followed by cries of pain and the funeral dirge.
Ah, Megan, eaten by the queen of the vampires. What a way to go!
Megan flounced back on her pillows.
Better than being a carrion-eating zombie.
She released the controls while Nick reset the game.
If there's one person in charge, she said, why wouldn't they try to make it harder for some players, the really good ones, and make the game last longer? Doesn't that make it more fun for everyone?
Which was exactly the opposite of what the creator of Shadow World had done. Lucy stared at the screen, now filled with character options and world-building suggestions, neon colors spinning and flashing as Nick tried various combinations. Shadow World was designed to attract female players, Bobby Fagley had told her. Yet, in the end, the Domain Master had eliminated all but one player, Ashley. What had he called himself? the maestro.
Megan Constance Callahan, you are a genius.
Both Nick and Megan looked up in surprise. Why? What'd I do?
I think you may have just helped me crack this case.
That girl you're looking for? Ashley?
Lucy hugged Megan hard, making the pulse ox machine sputter an alarm. Nick quieted the monitor.
I have a new idea that might help me find her, thanks to you.
She grabbed her cell phone and dialed.
Taylor, how do you like to do some field work?
His adrenaline buzz crackled through the handset.
I'd love it. What you need? Should I get my vest? Sign out any weapons?
Sign out a vehicle. Bring your laptop and meet me in front of Three Rivers in 10 minutes.
Will do.
And the opportunity to take action, to actually accomplish something more than waiting in dread for answers she couldn't control, Lucy felt a little better.
She hugged Megan again, mussing her hair and earning a scowl.
I'm going to leave for a short while, but I promise I'll be back tonight. Is that okay?
You're going to find that girl?
Because of what I said?
Yes.
I hope so.
Megan's sly grin returned.
Does that mean I can have my own computer? Maybe I can help some more?
No.
It means you may have just helped save a girl's life. How's that make you feel?
Her face lit up, freckles dancing across the bridge of her nose.
Kind of good. Like Christmas morning. Is this how it always feels?
Yes. Lucy's smile mirrored her daughter's. She kissed Megan's head, and for the first time in months, Megan didn't pull away. Every time.
She slid off the bed and reached for Nick's hand. You okay with this?
You heard the doc. They won't know anything more until morning. Go. You're wearing out the floor with your pacing anyway.
His voice was lighthearted but brittle. The wrinkles forming at the edge of his eyes betrayed him.
Seriously, Nick, if you have a problem with this...
He stood blocking Megan's view.
I don't have a problem with you finding that girl, trying to save her. His voice dropped. I do have a problem with you wearing yourself ragged and coming back with nothing left to give your own daughter.
She understood his words, but knew there was more to it. Nick never picked a fight unless he was certain he'd examined all sides of the equation.
Megan, honey, go ahead and set up a new game. Your father and I are going to be right outside.
Megan looked up at that, a bemused grin on her face.
You can fight here. I don't mind.
We're not fighting, sweetheart, Nick said in his calmest voice, syrupy with a hint of his southern accent, the one he only used when they were fighting. Your mother and I just need a little private discussion, that's all.
Whatever.
Her attention turned back to the computer game.
You'll be back tonight to stay with me, right, Mom?
You promised?
I promise. I'll be here tonight.
She kissed Megan on both cheeks and her nose, earning a familiar grimace and eye roll, then walked out into the corridor and kept going until she hit the stairwell. Nick followed her, without saying anything, until the door slammed shut behind him.
What was that all about?
She whirled on him, her voice low, but powerful enough to bounce from the cement block walls.
It was about you always needing to find another kid to save, another crusade to fight. If the worst is true, if Megan has...
He faltered.
If she's sick, then we're going to be in for the fight of our lives right here.
You think I'm using work as an excuse to avoid reality?
Yes. You think if you save this girl, you'll gain some protection, somehow be able to keep Megan safe as well. We call it magical thinking.
I don't need any of your psycho bullshit right now, thank you very much.
Say you save this girl, Ashley. What happens when you lose the next one, or the one after that? Where does it stop? You can't save them all.
She stared at him, not even realizing her gun hand was resting on her hip where her holster would usually sit. But Nick did. He glanced down pointedly at her hand before enveloping it in both of his, stilling her trembling.
You can't save the world, Lulu, he said, his voice filled with longing and sorrow. But you can help your daughter get through this.
And me.
you can help me. I need you. We need you.
His face was filled with concern and fear. How could she explain to him that without her work, she wouldn't have any strength to lend to her family? Being out there, seeing what she saw, doing what little she could to stop predators, it wasn't something she wanted to do. It was something she had to do. She had no words to offer him, nothing rational that he could analyze without twisting it around and turning it into nonsense. All she could do was shake her head, small little beats of denial. Her gaze locked on his, hoping he would understand. Tugging her hand from his, she stepped away. "I'm late." She jogged down the stairs, her footsteps crescendoing behind her, knowing that he watched her back every step of the way.
"Want me to try to follow them?"
Cindy's cameraman, Felix, asked as Guardino ran out of the hospital entrance and hopped into a black Chevy Blazer. Cindy watched the SUV drive away. "No, wait here. I'm going to go meet the family." He outfitted her with a button camera hidden inside a brooch. She grabbed a discarded visitor's pass from the garbage can in front of the entrance. Security was always a joke around hospitals. She smiled, thinking of the scoop she'd been handed, thanks to her instincts. She headed into the hospital and within minutes was on the fourth floor at Megan Callahan's room. The door was open. Inside, a young girl lay against several pillows, sleeping. A video game stood at the foot of the bed, whirling colors of screensavers spinning across it. Beside the girl lay a man, his eyes closed, but his hand moving, patting the girl's arm in a soothing rhythm. He had the lean build of an athlete, wiry without being muscle-bound, red gold hair with an enticing hint of a curl, and appeared to be younger than the 39 years she knew he was. Cindy had done her homework, had learned everything she could about Nick Callahan and his wife, always paid to know the enemy. She unbuttoned her suit jacket, made sure the camera lens was clear of any obstacles, and nudged the door so that it creaked a bit. Callahan's eyes sprung open and he sat up, untangling his arm from his daughter's.
"Yes?"
"I'm sorry, Dr. Callahan. I can come back later if you like," she said in a demure voice, even as she stepped into the room. "I ran into your wife downstairs. She didn't mention you were asleep." He slid from the bed and walked around it. He was only an inch or two taller than her own 5'10", but he seemed taller, the way he moved, so confident and graceful. Could men be graceful? Elegant, that was the word. She had a sudden image of an 18th-century nobleman and knew instinctively how to proceed. For once, sex wasn't the way to get what she needed from a man. "I am afraid I didn't make a very good impression on Mrs. Callahan," she said, conjuring a blush. "She doesn't hold the counseling profession in very high regard." She edged her glance up to see how he took the implied insult to his own profession. He merely smiled, his eyes gleaming, and she knew he was thinking of his wife in some shared intimate joke. A pang of jealousy hit her. No man ever looked that way when they thought about her. Burroughs came close, though. When they were together, he'd stare at her with an intensity that made her skin glow like it had been targeted by a laser. She could never tell if his stare was fueled by love or hate. Doubted he knew either. Callahan's head bobbed with a soundless laugh.
"Lucy firmly believes in the benefits of therapy, just doesn't have the patience to sit long enough to experience it herself."
He led her outside, keeping his voice low. Silently, he closed the door and gestured to two chairs at the end of the hallway.
"Are you one of the hospital counselors?"
She strolled with him, enjoying the way his gaze lingered as he examined her. Bingo. Half the battle won. "It must be quite frustrating for a psychologist of your caliber," she said, crossing her legs so that her ankle almost, but not quite, brushed his. "Giving up an NIMH grant when you left Virginia to come here?" His lips tightened, even as his face retained its bland geniality. "Ah, a sore spot. Is that where your wife was going? Back to work?" She injected a hint of concern into her tone.
How does that make you feel, her leaving you when Megan is so ill?
His stare hardened. He leaned back a bit. She pushed too hard.
You look very familiar, miss.
The silence lengthened.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name. And you don't seem to be wearing an ID badge.
I'm Cindy. She shoved her hand out fast, before he could think more about the missing ID, and gave him her mother's maiden name. Cindy Janluski. He took her hand with a strong grip, surprised her when he stood and gently tugged her back up to her feet as well.
Cindy, so nice to make your acquaintance.
As they began walking back to the nurse's station, he tucked her arm in his like a gentleman caller from the old days.
I appreciate your interest in my daughter's well-being, he continued in that same melodious lilt perfumed with magnolias and mint. But please tell your boss that if I ever see you or another reporter come anywhere near my child again, I will press charges. I believe it's a felony offense to interfere with a federal agent's family.
Before Cindy could pull away, he leaned over the counter and addressed the ward clerk.
Would you please have hospital security come and remove this meddlesome journalist before she has the chance to invade someone else's privacy?
Really? Cindy said, yanking her arm away from him with a force that rocked her on her heels.
I can see myself out. Although you may want to explain to your wife that if she wants to get along here in Pittsburgh, she'd do best to cooperate with me.
You're lucky it was me here to meet you and not my wife, he said as a hulking, acne-pocked security guard arrived.
She'd shoot first and worry about the paperwork later.
He gave her a quirky half-smile as if he were imagining just how a confrontation between her and Guardino might end. From the pitying expression he bestowed on her, she had the feeling he had no doubt that Guardino would win. She couldn't wait to prove them both wrong.